He's Brayton Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council back there looking pretty and executive producing the heck out of this thing. Bearded intern quietly staring awkwardly at all of us. That's just a typical morning on Brayton and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got.
I can't ever see him. He's so far back in the dark. It's like a cave back there.
Yeah. Well, and he got a.
Julian comes in the morning and turns the lights off.
Yeah,
he gets here,
which is interesting. And bearded intern is very high and tight, so fresh and clean. Just got the hair cut, but the beard is now even with the hair, so it's a very good look. Bearded intern, really rocking it. Obviously, feeling good this morning. So we're feeling good. We've been getting you caught up on all sorts of drama, conversations about hot seats in the SEC and in the NFL. Through all of it, you just heard in the update last night, the NBA gave out some hardware. The NBA gave out some awards last night. They gave out the MVP award. Russell Westbrook wins. They give out the Coach of the Year to Mark D'Antoni of the Rockets. Draymond Green wins the Defensive Player of the Year. But all of it made one thing really stick out to me, and it's what I need to go unfiltered on this morning.
We all have our filters. Well, most of us. This is Fitz Unfiltered. Now, Jason Fitz.
So I'm following along with the NBA awards, and I'm trying to keep my eye on it and see if anything important happens. And in the process, I see an award given out that makes me do a double take. In fact, I not only got off my phone, I pulled out my laptop. And that's a rare thing. You know, at that point, you're bringing out the big guns. You're really committing to figuring out what this really is. I pull out the laptop and I Google this. It's a real thing. Giannis Antetokounmpo, a player that I love just saying his name, Giannis Antetokounmpo, just to prove I can, won an award last night. What award did he win? Most Improved Player. This is an NBA award show. This isn't T-ball. All right, this isn't where you line up everybody, give out a blue ribbon, and you really recognize little Timmy for not stinking as bad this year as he did last year. This is the real sport. This is Major League. This is professional basketball, and you're going to give out a Most Improved? Does he get a participation award with that? Does he get Skittles with that? Does he get like a little prize? Does his mom come up and give him a hug afterwards? Most Improved Player? This is everything that's wrong with society at this point, not just with the NBA Awards show. I am not ever going to watch another NBA Awards broadcast unless they get rid of the Blue Ribbon Participation Award category of Most Improved Player. Total joke from a Total Joke Award show.
Did you watch last night?
No. I followed on my phone.
So when you say I will never watch one again.
Yeah, I'll never follow.
For the first time.
I won't watch.
So
I might have watched again. I mean,
you're so positive all the time, and I am very we as a show unit, and I don't want to speak for everyone on the show, but if anyone disagrees, let me know. We are as a show anti-participation trophy, correct?
Yes. Oh yeah.
As a show, I believe Julian Council is on board with this.
I once, as a kid, as a musician, I once won a competition as a violinist, and I won the whole thing. But I got a silver medal, not a gold. And they came in and they said, your performance wasn't good enough to get a gold. Yeah. You were the best one here. We're going to give you a silver.
Now that sucks, dude.
So, no. They were right. I did not
you
play
won
particularly
the competition
well. I did not play well enough to win.
I'll say this.
I did not play well enough to win.
Raise your kids however you want, but if they end up soft, that's on you.
Yep.
There you go.
And that's fine.
But now that's a little your situation's a little harsh where you won the competition fair and square and still didn't get the gold.
Got a silver. They were like, that was not a gold medal.
That is hard standards.
It made me who I am today, all right?
That is hard standards. And maybe that's why you're such an old fuddy-duddy yelling at Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's just trying to enjoy having a Most Improved looks kind of stupid on the bottom line. Like, when you see it scroll, you know, and you're seeing all the awards scroll, you're like, Most Improved, you're like, okay, it looks kind of stupid. But I wasn't really offended by it, though.
Like you were. You put that up on the mantle, Most Improved. See, last year, not very good. This year, the NBA recognized
what else
me.
Is
I
on
got
his,
better.
What else is on his mantle?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
right now, it's the one. It's the thing up there.
I wouldn't put it up.
And if he gets an MVP, then he'll move the Most Improved trophy into the closet.
The most improved trophy today would be on eBay. Like, I'd just be like, let's get some cash, go to Vegas instead. That's the way to celebrate. Okay. Who wants my Most Improved trophy? Be up on eBay.
So I'm a big believer, and this spurred a really interesting conversation before the show. I'm pro like every kid getting a chance to play if I'm spending money for my kid to play in a league, but I'm very anti-participation trophy. Can those two things exist?
Sure.
Can I feel that way?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I get that. That makes sense. I think if you're brand, like if you're in your first year at T-ball or whatever.
And like everybody should play.
Everybody should. The first year in T-ball, you're trying to figure out, teach everybody how to play. Yes, everybody
should
play.
If I'm spending $50 a week,
but
my kid better be out there sometimes at least. Not all the time, but sometimes.
I am a definite believer that that should, as quickly as humanly possible, phase out. Like, I'm not a big believer in everybody gets to play. Like, when you're in your second year at T-ball, you know what? I should not have gotten to play in my second year.
I'm just a utility infielder at that point.
At that point, they should just be like, why don't you? No, I would have been the scorekeeper. They'd be like, you know what?
When they're six, you're saying 6 year olds still shouldn't be playing. Like, that's ridiculous.
I think there's a middle ground between second year of T-ball. Maybe like,
hey,
maybe
I
like
if it's little league, like let the kids years. Play. If it's travel ball and you're trying to win, you're paying the money, whatever. If your kid's not good enough, he's not good enough.
Once you get to the select, like soccer select, like if you're on a select team, you've been picked to play on that team. That team needs to be run like a regular sports team. But if you're all like 7 years old and you're all just paying in a big kitty to like everybody, every parent chips in and you pay. Like, I don't agree with anybody that finishes in last place getting a trophy though. Like, I don't think if you win the league, you get a trophy. That's it.
Yeah, I totally.
I don't think you get a trophy. If there's a second place ribbon, fine. But after that, you don't. There's a difference between every kid getting a chance to play and every kid getting a participation trophy. I think those are different things.
Sure, sure.
Rewarding success versus, hey, everybody gets to have a good time.
I think that the hard part of it, and again, this is part of the reason why we don't have kids, because we looked at this and said, no way. You know, the hard part for me is that if you're playing
it. This is what did it for you.
Yeah, once you, well, this is one of many things, but once you start to look at, you know, the results and you say, okay, it's a team-oriented result and, you know, somebody's not cutting their weight, I know, I get it that 6 years old, but I will say, you know, you're talking to somebody that by the time I was eight, I practiced 8 hours a day.
You grew up differently than everyone else.
By the time I was seven, I was in a competitive college stage orchestra. So, you know, you got your seat or you didn't get your seat.
Just because you were a child prodigy doesn't mean that anyone else is.
It was a much different world, you know, but I will say that's what drove me.
You had somebody throw staplers at you.
That is.
At what age?
And snow globes. That was around 10, 9 or 10.
10.
My teacher, when I was in,
good Lord.
When I was eight, my first real like hardcore violin teacher had a prosthetic leg, and he would take it off and he would threaten to hit me with it if I played poorly in the lesson, which is funny now, but when you're eight, really
terrified.
With your
yeah, you're yeah, terrified.
I just cry like a baby on the way home.
So like, this is where it all comes from. You should not be terrifying 8 year olds.
Well, you
they're 8 year olds, dude. Well, 8 year olds.
That's a fair point. That's why we don't, you know, that's why we have dogs, not kids. You know, I will say I realize that my stance on that is a little drastic. However, my stance on most improved player for Giannis and Antetokounmpo, you're talking about somebody that makes millions of dollars and he gets an award for most improved. Like, that's giving him a pat on the butt and saying, you know what, buddy? You weren't near as bad this year for the money as you were last year. Congrats on being a pro.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it's in high school, like, we gave out most improved on our football team
in
high
school. I can see that.
Like, it's like a little tiny plaque.
I don't know. I mean, last year, CJ McCollum won it, and he came out of nowhere to be a really good, important piece of that backcourt with Portland and with Damian Lillard. It's like, hey, CJ McCollum, you had a great season. Of course, there's no other award can give you. But like, hey,
is there a better way though? Is there a better award, Fitzy? How would you fix that then? Because I
just wouldn't give the trophy.
I don't know.
You know what his award is? His award is doing his job.
Surprising player. Like,
I'm just trying to. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm just trying to point out an example where it's like, hey, like
breakout star.
I mean, I would look at this and say breakout star is not bad. You could go breakout star, I guess. I would look at this and say the award for Giannis Antetokounmpo is actually earning his money. That's what I would say. And I know that sounds harsh, but you're talking about somebody that makes $3 million a year to play basketball. So he makes $3 million, which is right now very low for what he does, but he makes $3 million, and he essentially got a trophy that was like, hey, thanks for not being as terrible this year, you know, taking that big step up and actually earning your $3 million.
That's not what the trophy means.
I mean,
to Julian's point, it's pointing out someone who has emerged as a star. I'm most improved just looks weak. It looks like weak sauce scrolling along the bottom of the thing. But if you've got, like, come up with a better name then. And
or just don't give the trophy. Just be like, congratulations, you're doing your job.
So should we reward someone for breaking out and becoming a superstar? Because it is different than just doing your job.
Like, yeah, you reward him with a max value contract and then a trade to a team where he can actually win a championship.
Wow.
This is the NBA system. Oh. Come on. I'll admit I'm harsh.
Johnny on Twitter says, was Whiplash based on Jason Fitz's childhood?
Whiplash was not that far off, I will say that. Whiplash was a pretty accurate. That's why
great
I've had a hard time sitting through portions of Whiplash. I'm like, this is a little too close
to home.
PTSD. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why so many classical musicians eventually wake up one day and quit playing. There's a reason why I'm doing sports talk.
Is it better or worse than Manchester by the Sea? That's what I need to know.
I didn't see Manchester by the
Sea.
Is it better or worse?
Because like I've heard Manchester by the Sea is so good, so depressing.
They were both nominated for Best Picture, so I will not tell you which one if they were better or worse. They're both phenomenal movies.
Okay, both phenomenal movies. I keep hearing that I need to see Manchester by the Sea because it's so good, but that it's so depressing. I need to be like,
I have it on DVD if you want it.
You know what? I will say John came on Twitter and said Best Breakout Season Award. Maybe you could do the Breakout Player of the Year. Maybe that's
the exact same thing. All you guys want is different wording. Either you want the award or you don't.
I'm trying to figure out what Fitzy wants.
I know. What I'm saying. For people who offer like, oh, maybe Best Breakout Player. Sure, great thing to offer up. But the point is, either you want the award or you don't.
I don't want the award. I'm trying to reach
if you want different wording, it's the exact same award.
Do you want the award, Julian?
I don't care.
No, that's
I don't really care either, but yeah. I'm trying to have a take.
I'm just point out the fact that Giannis is going to win every championship in 2 years from then on out until he retires.
Why is he
that's
getting
the conversation here. Who cares if Giannis won most improved? The conversation is the Warriors have 2 years. Warriors and everyone in the league have 2 years, and then Giannis is going to win every championship until
right.
the end of his time.
I hope you're right. Kid's awesome.
Yeah, like I just want to be able to say Antetokounmpo. That's what I really want. Antetokounmpo. Yeah.
Greek freak.
We don't have a Greek freak on the Titans, but we do have some Titans conversation to get into. By the way, Stephen Holder, who covers the Colts for the Indy Star, going to join us at the 30 block. So we're just a few minutes away from him, but we're going to get into some of this with the Titans. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. If there was a contest for a tweet of the day, our buddy Ziggs over at 102.9, Ziggs would win. He tweeted us and said, I was going to say you guys were the rising stars of sports radio, but apparently you're just doing your job. It's amazing. Well played, Ziggs.
Who also, by the way, pops in frequently during breaks and continues to stir up conversation.
Yeah.
Routinely on the program.
Lots of love between 102.5 and 102.9, by the way. We love those guys.
If we got most improved, would you throw that award away?
Yes, I would not put that up. Most improved?
Okay.
No, I would not put that up. Don't forget, by the way, you want to sign up for the Michelob Ultra Foursome Golf Contest. Michelob Ultra, Mapco and the Game, Nashville, giving one lucky winner and three friends a chance to experience the Ultra Foursome at four prestigious golf courses in Middle Tennessee, as well as passes to the Nashville Golf Open. To sign up, you know what to do. Visit thegamenashville.com/Michelob Ultra Foursome. Go out there, do it now, win, and then invite us to be a part of it. I played some putt-putt yesterday. I don't want to say I'm a quality putter, but three hole-in-ones on putt-putt yesterday, so I'm basically the best. Braden's got nothing. There's
I
a blank
enjoy,
stare.
I enjoy putt-putt.
A blank stare.
You don't really keep score at putt-putt.
So
I mean, like the point of golf isn't to like win the game because you can't. The point of playing golf is to just play.
Oh, okay.
And to sort of beat yourself, right? Like it's about beating your own score or whatever. In putt-putt, you could play against your buddies and want to beat them, but I'm not sure you're like, man, I really play this course well. I'm really good on this one putt-putt course.
There was a fantastic.
My 12-year-old cousin, Sasha, is one of the top 100 players in the world in golf, and she would destroy you at putt-putt.
Okay, that's good to know. I mean, I would take that on. We should YouTube that because I would love to get that.
Did you just challenge a 12-year-old girl?
No, I know I'm going to lose. That's what I want. I want to get my butt kicked by a 12-year-old girl at putt-putt.
I thought you were calling her out. Like, no, I'll take that challenge.
I just want everyone to see me get my butt kicked. There was a funny moment yesterday when Sunny hit she hit one perfectly and it rolled up and it went in and it was a hole in one and she did this whole dance and like she was doing the dance down things like
the Adam Sandler feeling the flow.
Basically. And then
I
hit right after her and immediately sunk a hole in one in the same hole.
Oh no.
And she looked at me with that like, I'm supposed to be happy for you because
But you took all of my joy.
Yeah, but it was like, oh, that's awesome.
Topper.
So that was our putt-putt moment. So
also you just challenged 12-year-old girl, I think, to a putt-putt contest.
Yeah.
Is what just happened.
Yeah, absolutely. All day, every day. And I'll talk trash.
Top 100 player in the world.
Yeah, I'll talk trash. That's the important thing. I will hit one quality shot, and then I will trash talk a 12-year-old. That's
I need to putt-putt more often.
But I will not insult her with the most improved award at any point in the process. So Stephen Holder going to join us in just a few minutes, Colts reporter for the Indy Star. We want to start getting some perspective from the other cities because, again, if you weren't listening earlier, we had this conversation a little bit, and I want to make sure everybody understands it. If you're sitting in Jacksonville today, you're making an argument on the radio station, and the callers are calling in supporting it, that your team's about to get a lot better and that the AFC South is so tightly packed, it's up for the taking. If you're sitting in Houston, Texans fans, Texans radio, they're sitting there saying, hey, we've won the division 2 years in a row with nothing at quarterback. Now we've added Deshaun Watson. We're going to crush. And if you're sitting in Indy, you're turning around saying, hey, it's a new GM, better talent. This is the year it all comes together. We were 8-8 last year, even though we didn't play particularly well. Andrew Luck will be fine, and the Colts will win this division. I think every single fan base right now can be making the argument that this team, their team, is the best team in the AFC South. And I think all of them have the opportunity to win it, but I also think all of them have the opportunity to take a step back. I wouldn't be surprised if any of these teams did not perform as well as they each of their fan bases expect. It's just like the SEC.
Can I say I completely agree with everything you're saying except for Jacksonville?
Yes.
Jacksonville's never won the AFC South. The Texans have won it 4 of the last 6 years with, I believe, 4 different quarterbacks.
Right.
And I do completely agree with your basic premise that every fan in those three cities is feeling that way. I think only the delusional fans in Jacksonville think that they are capable of winning the division. It doesn't mean they're not going to be improved. It doesn't mean there's not reason for optimism. And like kind of like how this city was last year, right? Hey, this city expected improvement. We expected growth. We expected, you know, 6 or 7 wins. And, you know, we still have to throw an 8-8 parade. But we expected growth. How does it feel? How does it look? What did Mariota do? I think those are questions that that Jacksonville's asking. I think all the other questions are exactly the same. The Texans are thinking we can win the division. Same with the fans. Same with Indianapolis, and same with the Titans. I think all three of those teams are Georgia, Florida, Tennessee of the SEC East. They're not great teams. They're not ever going to be considered the best in the conference or be contenders with the Alabama, a.k.a. the Patriots. But I think all three of them feel like they are capable of winning the division and capable of hosting a playoff game in the postseason and winning that playoff game. I think all three of those teams feel that way. I would not include Jacksonville.
I don't think that Jacksonville necessarily thinks that they have a shot at the division, but I would say this. We mentioned earlier, obviously, Calais Campbell is somebody that's coming in and helping their defensive line. Brandon Albert is their new offensive tackle, their new left tackle coming in, and he's going to play. They expect he will play well. There are some moments there where they can start to look at it and say, okay, now the thing that we all know about Jacksonville is that it all rests on the shoulders of Blake Bortles. And obviously, Blake Bortles did not have a particularly good year last year. We all know that. But there is a point where you have to look at it and say, Blake was expected to be better last year. Blake took a step back last year. And I realize his stats have always sort of been fantasy stats. He gets a lot of garbage time in the process. But when you look at it, he was expected to take a step forward. And instead, his yards were down. His touchdowns were way down. You look at his quarterback rating was down. It's never been particularly good. But
he dominated in body language, though.
Well, and
he was really good
late in games when the games are out of hand.
He was so tied into what was going on.
I mean, he was terrible several times last year, flat out accuracy issues. So what's going to be interesting to see is, can Doug Marrone fix it? Because they didn't address it in the draft. So I don't know if that's a statement to what they didn't see in the draft, or if that's a statement that they want to get Bortles another year.
And some master of the obvious stuff here that kind of continues your point about all three teams being capable. The AFC South champion has not had a first-round bye in the playoffs since 2009. Think about that. I mean, that means the AFC South champion hasn't been one of the best two teams in the AFC in almost a decade.
Wow.
So, I mean, and the winner has been 9-7 the last 2 years, 10-6 in 2010, 10-6 in 2011, 1-12-4 year from Houston in 2012, and then 11-5, 11-5. So, four of the last six champions have lost six times. And they haven't had a first-round bye since the Colts in 2009, which is the team, I guess, that lost – the Peyton team that lost to Drew Brees in the Super Bowl.
Right.
So the point is the division has been up for grabs for about a decade, and 10-6, 11-5 gets you there. And your Raiders finished 12-4 last year and were in second place.
Right.
That's the state of the AFC South right now. It is there for the taking, for someone to take it.
And you're right that when it's that tightly compacted, part of what you feel good about, if you're a Titans fan – you feel good about the fact that maybe Deshaun Watson makes one mistake, and that one mistake costs them one game, and that's all the difference you need. Maybe Luck really isn't where he needs to be. Maybe Luck is rusty when he comes in. The Colts, maybe the Colts just aren't better. If the Colts just do what they did last year, they're an 8-8 team again. They're not better. They're not in the way. You know, if the Titans can get one game better in the course of the season, then they have the opportunity to win the division if nobody else has any strides in any direction. So that's part of your hope here. I keep looking at it and saying, the Titans have so much to prove in their ability to just whoop on the rest of this division.
I agree. I will say this, though. Can you admit that the most balanced team from a talent standpoint in the right places is Tennessee? Could you argue that? Like, it's certainly more balanced than the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, I'd have to think through the Texans because the Texans have, obviously.
Does the quarterback not make that big of a difference? I mean,
yeah, the quarterback does obviously make that big of a difference.
Defensively, the Texans are better.
Right.
But defensively, the Titans aren't bad. Offensively, the Titans pretty good last year, the best they've been in 12, 15 years. We expect them to get better. Great offensive line. Good running game. I mean, there's not glaring weaknesses. It feels like on this Titans team like there was last year in the secondary and at wide receiver, they've addressed those by spending lots of team capital,
right,
whether that's investing in free agency or draft picks.
I think that there are some spots. You're right, that the quarterback actually makes a big enough difference. There are still some spots, I think, when you talk about the defensive line, when you talk about the corners, and when you talk about the wide receivers. Today, I'm still going to put my money on the Texans. Having more proven entities right there.
And losing A.J. Bouye is a big blow for the Texans. I love the Zach Cunningham pick, though. I think that is, like, getting him in the draft, I think, is a big deal for the Texans front seven because it just continues to make that front seven even better and more dynamic. So I agree that the Texans have the huge edge on defense. I think the Titans have a big edge on offense. So which of the weaker units steps up? Well, the Titans went out and really addressed special teams in a big way, right? That was their goal, was to go get special
right.
teams. They went and did that. Adoree Jackson, I think, is going to be a really, really special teams player, if that makes sense. They went out and got – they paid money for guys that just make tackles on special teams. Not many teams do that.
Right.
So I think that they've addressed special teams. Offense, you feel like, is in a pretty good shape, especially if Decker and Davis turn out to be guys that can play regularly. I think there's the chance for the Titans to be the most balanced is very much there. The prove-it element that you're talking about is still the issue.
I mean, I will say, I thought last year at the end of the year, the Titans were, inarguably, they were the best team in the division.
Right.
And they still didn't win it because they stepped on their own feet. Stephen Holder, Colts reporter for Indy Star, he's going to join us up next. We'll get the Indy thoughts on the Colts from their perspective. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. You're listening to Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are getting you caught up on everything you need to know about the AFC South, taking a little time here in June to get you set on the sense and the feeling around everybody else in the division, because we know, obviously, there's a lot of hype here. But I think we'd also agree that every other city in this division, maybe other than Jacksonville, is also clinging to some hope. So we want to help bring that analysis to you directly. So we got the Colts reporter from the Indy Star, Stephen Holder, joining us. Stephen, thanks for giving us some time this morning, man. We appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
So talk to me a little bit about the general sense in Indianapolis for this season coming up, because we feel like optimism is abound here in Tennessee, but I get the sense that maybe that's the way every city feels in the division. What is the sense in Indianapolis right now regarding the Colts this year?
Well, so I think there's what I would describe as like cautious optimism, and there's a couple of factors that cause it to be cautious as opposed to like outright. And so one would obviously be, does Andrew Luck get back on track, you know, as quickly as everyone hopes? That's something, you know, no one can forecast. And I think he'll be healthy. The question is, how does he play right out of the gate? And that's a big question for the Colts. They have a pretty manageable opening schedule. So they have an opportunity to get off to a great start. So that's one. The other thing is, this team is really just been constructed on the defensive side. So there's really no telling how that's going to look. I think the talent level is better. I mean, they were one of the worst defenses in the NFL last season. So they've upgraded to some extent. The question is, we don't know to what extent. And that's something that we can only find out by watching this unit play together. They're all going to be new. There's going to be as many as 7 new starters on defense, which is insane. So those are two things that I think right now no one can really accurately forecast. But when you look at this football team, if the defense is better – and Andrew Luck truly is healthy, they still have an offense that last season was 8th in scoring in the NFL with, despite being undermined by that defense. So they still have a chance to be very good offensively with the potential for the offensive line to be even more improved. So I think the opportunity for Indianapolis is there, but those things have to come together.
So the parallels that I find really interesting with the Titans hiring John Robinson last year and then keeping sort of status quo at the coaching staff, whatever you want to call that, with Mike Mularkey, it seemed to have worked. There are glowing reviews when the Colts hired Chris Ballard as the GM, and he sort of kept status quo with the coaching staff. Is Chris Ballard capable of this type of turnaround the way John Robinson showed he was capable last year?
Well, I think when you have the quarterback situation stabilized, and that was something that John was able to benefit from, right, in Tennessee, that gives you the opportunity. So, you know, we'll see. I think two things. Chris Ballard did something that Ryan Grigson was reluctant to do, and that is to finally hit the reset button on defense. And that was something that Ryan Grigson had shown a reluctance to do for too long. Everyone knew it had to be done, and they finally blew it up. That defense, you've seen it, it was old, and they were done. And this just had to happen, and it was something that had been pushed back and sort of kicked down the road too long. So finally that's happened. And as far as, you know, Chuck Pagano and Chris Ballard, here's the thinking from Chris Ballard. He saw, when he came in, he saw the film, he saw what the talent level was, and he was not convinced that Chuck Pagano could win with the talent level that he had previously in the building. So this is his shot. So we'll find out what Chuck Pagano well, let's put it this way. I think Chris Ballard is going to make up his mind about Chuck Pagano after the coming season when he finds out, you know, after getting an up-close and personal look at his coach, what he can actually do with the roster that's been assembled.
We're talking to Stephen Holder, Colts reporter for the Indy Star. Talk to me a little bit about the draft picks, because Malik Hooker, Quincy Wilson, obviously they aggressively went after rebuilding the secondary in the draft. Have you gotten a chance to get any sense of how those guys are acclimating yet?
Well, I'll start by saying this. The front seven was the focus of free agency, and they really went hard there. You know, the Jonathan Hankins acquisition could really pay off. He's certainly a proven interior defensive lineman, so that was big. They've got guys like, you know, Sean Spence, who, you know, not huge acquisitions, but guys who at least add to the competition level in the front seven. So we'll see how that pans out. Now, and the back end, they really hadn't touched that at all and had a lot of work to do there. So the secondary was a big focus of the draft. They had three defensive backs picked out of their eight picks. And the Malik Hooker acquisition, I like that a lot. But he really fell to them. He was never a guy they targeted just because they didn't think they'd get him. So the Colts felt really fortunate to have Malik Hooker fall there. And he hasn't been able to participate in the offseason because he had offseason surgery. But it was something that they're forecasting he'll be back from for the start of training camp. So right now he's on schedule. Certainly Quincy Wilson out of the University of Florida in their second-round pick, he could be a starting corner for them opposite Vontae Davis, depending on how his training camp goes. So they have high hopes for these guys, and two of their four starting defensive backs could be rookies. So that's a tall bar, but I do think the youth and the speed will help this defense be better, even if they're not as experienced. Those things, I think, will sort of even out the playing field.
Certainly the number one thing everybody talks about with Andrew Luck is his protection and the offensive line. And they invest in Ryan Kelly 2 years ago in the first round. I think Zach Banner's a really talented kid, big-time recruit, played at USC, could be a contributor. Have they invested enough in the offensive line to protect their asset at quarterback?
Yeah, I think they feel like they've done enough. And we'll see. You know, this season will determine that answer long-term. But in the short term, I think the answer is yes. They have really gone hard. They had four draft picks on the offensive line in the 2016 draft, and then this year added a couple more. So I think those resources are resources they have not invested well in the past. This year, not only did they invest the resources, they feel like they got the right guys, and that really is everything. So I feel like this offensive line has a chance to really take a step forward. Now, you know, look, we're forecasting here, and this is all on paper. But on paper, I'm telling you, this line is going to be potentially the best Andrew Luck has ever had. That may not be saying much, but if you give that kid a chance, and I think give him the protection that, you know, most quarterbacks can at least rely upon, that changes everything for Andrew Luck. He's never been able to have that, never been able to say that. And I think that would really sort of alter the trajectory of the kid's career if he can have consistent protection.
Fantastic stuff, guys. Follow him on Twitter, at Holder Steven. Steven Holder, we appreciate your time, man. Colts reporter for the Indy Star. Thanks for coming on with us this morning, man.
All right, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff from him. Also want to point out, we always talk about how the NFL schedules are not that different. You know, you play basically 14 of the 16 opponents that you're playing are all the same for everybody in the division. That being said, two are different. We talked about how tight the division is going to be. It makes a big difference that second and third place. But I will say this, according to last season's records, the Colts have the easiest slate this year in the entire NFL. They have the easiest schedule this year. So,
who are the teams that they get, the two that rotate off the schedule?
They're going to get the other last place teams. I have to look there. But they do have – or third place teams, sorry, yeah. They do have Cleveland, San Francisco, the Rams. They get Jacksonville twice. So that's part of why that everybody – has that schedule being so easy for them. But they're going to get the third-place teams in this process.
It would have been Denver on a Thursday night, right?
Right, that's Denver on a Thursday night.
And then Buffalo. So they get Denver and Buffalo, whereas the Titans get
Oakland
and
Miami.
So that's the two-game difference swing right there. And that is clearly more difficult, Miami and Oakland versus Denver and Buffalo. But Buffalo and Denver, both teams that think that they can sort of rebound quickly and push. So a slightly easier schedule. I think it's the timing of the schedule that helps Indianapolis. Their schedule is easier in the first month. Titans much more difficult in the first month. And it's scary to hear something like, this could be the best offensive line Andrew Luck has ever had. Even if that doesn't mean much, that's still a scary thought for opposing defenses.
And that's, again, an example of what we want to do. We want to let you know what everybody else is thinking. We're going to continue, by the way, doing that all week. So we've got some other guys that are going to come on that cover the AFC South. We've got Jacksonville covered for you tomorrow. And I think
Houston covered on Friday.
Houston covered on Friday.
Hopefully we can get some guys from SI who have some good stuff to say about the Titans. So
we'll keep breaking it. I know it's
only we were pumping brakes. I thought you, like, screeched back there.
Oh, look, we can pump the brakes, but on Friday we have these guests on.
Oh,
we're going to, you know, build up the hype train.
Okay. Yeah, hype train's just going to get you straight into
it's like the
holiday weekend.
The third log from Back to the Future, where you put the third log in the hype train, and it goes 30 years into the future.
And then it goes off. Speaking of going off, we'll continue to go off on what we just heard and give you a little bit more analysis on the state of the South. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I got guns in my head and they won't go. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet.
Whose head is he messing with this one?
Who is this?
The Strombellas.
Oh, okay.
Of course, right.
Okay, my bad. My fault. My whatever was I thinking?
I listen to a lot of music and I've never heard of that.
You haven't.
I've heard this song.
You, the music snob.
I know.
I haven't heard of the Strombellas. It's disappointing.
Have you played this before? I feel like I've heard this song.
I may have. Okay. May have. Yeah.
It wouldn't be a radio segment if
they
I wasn't
performed at ACL, so they're up your alley, Braden.
That's Austin City Limits, I believe, for people that don't know.
I know several people that have torn an ACL, but that's
sorry. I hope their rehab went well.
Yeah, that is a fair point.
Joe Thornton? Are we talking about free agency?
Come on, Joe. Come on to Nashville. We've got you. We've got ACL covered. So it's interesting to me because I can't. This is what I can't figure out. Everybody seems to be all up on the Titans. A lot of people on the Colts, too. We don't want to. We don't forget
Beware
that.
Beware the Colts.
But I wonder in this process how much of it is just you got to find something fresh and new and different. Because last year, a lot of people were up on the Raiders before the season started. So now that already feels like, okay, well, the Raiders and the Chiefs and the Steelers and the Patriots, we know those teams are good. So then you're trying to find that next level team. So how much of the hype is because people genuinely believe in it? And how much of the hype is just because you're looking for that exciting storyline that you think is going to play out, and now Tennessee could be that?
Well, and that's what Peter King said when he put Tennessee at four. He said, you have to find one team that sort of comes out of nowhere and makes that jump. And the Raiders were, what, 7-9 the year before, right? Is that right? Or were they 9? They weren't 9-7. They weren't winning.
No, they hadn't had a winning season.
So they were like 7-9 to 12-4 is that jump that he's talking about. And what he's saying in that argument is that there is going to be one of those. Who is it going to be in each conference? So there's going to be one of those. Who's it going to be? Well, that eliminates Miami because they were already there and made the playoffs. That eliminates, I mean, Baltimore, I think, could be that team that takes a jump. But that means they'd have to go from like 9-7, 8-8 to 12-4. And I don't think anybody thinks Baltimore could be 12-4. So you're trying to pinpoint a team that could take that jump. And the Colts are absolutely a team that could go from 8-8 to 12-4 and win the division. Would anybody be totally shocked by that?
I think
that you just got done saying everybody's in it. You know, like, I don't think that would be shocking.
And I think that's why people are picking teams from the South to make the leap, because when you look at when you look at, for example, you just mentioned the Ravens. The Ravens still have to play the Steelers, and everybody really believes in the Steelers, you know? So there's just this perception that there's a clear-cut difference between one and two there. And there's a perception in the East, there's a clear-cut difference between New England and Miami. And in the West, there seems to be a clear-cut difference between Kansas City, Oakland, and Denver. So, like, you've got two teams there. But in the South, there's not really a clear-cut difference between any of them. So you can make a compelling argument for any of them sweeping their division, except for Jacksonville, or any of them not doing well against
their
division.
And I think, again, it's sort of like if you're forced to pick one, right? Like, you've got to pick a team in the AFC to make that jump. We don't like Cincinnati. We don't like Baltimore. We just talked about it. Denver offensively is way too challenged on offense to take that jump. So
too
I think
much
it's
transition.
So, so I think it's smart to go to the AFC South to find that team because I don't think Buffalo, like you said, I don't think Buffalo is going to be there. The Jets have completely punted and given up. The Browns aren't involved in this conversation. The Chargers could be that sneaky team that they're good enough on offense. All of a sudden, the new coaching staff and the quarterback mesh, and all of a sudden they go, you know, they win an extra five games and they win 11 games. I would not say so in that division. That seems like
and
a very
difficult.
And
I think the division is the reason people don't predict that.
Right. Yeah. But if you were to look at the three teams in the South and say, all right, one of these teams is going to win four more games. Just that's what's going to happen. I'm guaranteeing that it's going to happen. One of these teams is going to win four more games than they did last year. I think it's fair to assume that if that is going to happen, which is unlikely, but let's say it does, that the Titans are in the best situation for that to happen. Because the Colts, you're asking for a completely reworked defense and a porous offensive line to be fixed overnight. And you're asking Deshaun Watson, a rookie quarterback, to win four more games for you. So I think if you're saying that's going to happen, I think if I'm a betting man, the bet would be the Titans. Because they have the coaching staff, the GM in place. The defense is going to get better, ideally, in the secondary. You've got the quarterback and the offensive line already in place. You've got good tight ends and running backs. You've added some receiver pieces. Like, it seems like if you had to bet your mortgage on one of those three teams taking a big leap forward, the most logical and rational of them is the Titans. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it does feel like they're the most logical and rational pick to do that.
To make a big leap, yes. I think if it's going to take a small jump, if 10 wins wins the division, then I still go back to Houston makes more sense. Because my concern here is, look, we all think that Marcus Mariota is going to end up – how many times last week did I talk about how much he's about to get paid? Okay, so this is nothing against Marcus Mariota. But the fact is, you're presuming as a Titans fan, you're coming into it saying that the injury has no lingering effect – that he won't get injured again, and he's somebody that has had that tendency, and that he's going to continue to develop. And he's going to continue to develop and get better, even though he has different wide receivers around him, a couple of which have no NFL experience. And then you're also banking on the fact that a secondary that has no NFL experience, largely in sections, is going to suddenly be able to play at a high level, and they're all going to be able to communicate. They're all going to be able to come together. That's a lot of what-ifs.
I agree.
And it's a lot of what-ifs.
I will say this, though, because I do find the Mariota health discussion to be one of the most interesting ones, because it's not like he just got like a little nick here or a little nick there, missed the game, because it's only been two games in each season, but they were season-ending. That's the difference. Like it wasn't a minor injury, but to that point, and I'll throw this out there, Andrew Luck has been hurt his entire career. So has Deshaun Watson.
Sure,
all right, he was great the last 2 years. People forget he had a torn ACL just 3 years ago. So he's got knee problems just like Marcus Mariota had knee problems in college. It doesn't mean it's going to translate to the NFL, and I don't think Mariota has had like he had the knee thing 2 years ago, correct?
Right.
But it wasn't like torn ACL-ish.
Right.
So I think you could sort of draw parallels with all of these quarterbacks and say there is that pause button with all three of them.
Sure.
If you told me 16 games for all three of them, Andrew Luck is the best in my opinion, but I think Marcus Mariota has the best supporting cast and the best situation, and I think Deshaun Watson has the best defense. So you sort of look at all three of them and go, all right, they're about the same. It's the other supporting pieces. You know, can the Titans defense get better? Can the Colts defense get better? Can Deshaun Watson be as good as we think he can be? I think it's asking a lot for Deshaun Watson to be as good as Mariota and Luck right out of the gate. I think that's asking him a lot.
I agree. Do you think they'll put that much on Deshaun's plate though out of the gate? I mean, how much of their strategy is going to be to win games 10-6?
What's the over under on games before he starts?
I don't know.
Like, what would you place that?
Four.
Like four and a half?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's in it four games. He's in
so
by
three. If I said 3.5 games over under before Deshaun Watson gets a start, you would take the over.
Yes.
Okay. I think that sounds about right. I mean, if they go 1-2, 1-3 with Tom Savage, they're going
to
change.
I mean, I think their hope is that they don't have to even find out about Tom Savage. I mean, this is just
he's
like,
just the guy from right away.
That's going to be the hope, that they've got somebody that can sort of protect him should he need protecting, but then they can also just throw him to the wolves if he seems to be ready to throw to the wolves. Well, I think that's
I was
be-
on Deshaun Watson Island a long time ago, so I guess I got to stay there.
Yeah, well, you know,
I guess I think he'll be the starting quarterback.
I'm still not sold that ultimately he's going to be a great starting quarterback. I just think that that team is so good that you could be an okay starting quarterback, well, and you're going to have a ton of success there.
Who has won the division?
I mean, exactly.
For the Texans. I mean, can you name him?
Well, Brian Hoyer was a
Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, Brock Osweiler. And
did T.J. Yates start a whole season or just a couple of games at the end?
Just part of the season. Just part of the season.
I mean, seriously, name the Texans division-winning quarterbacks.
Well, the best quarterback that they've had, the best quarterback Bill O'Brien has had to work with since he came to Houston is Brian Hoyer, and that's not good. I mean, that's just flat out not good.
That's
so
not good.
If the only measure for Deshaun Watson is, hey, man, be as good as Brian Hoyer, then they're going to win the division. That's sort of the way my mind goes. And can Deshaun Watson be as good as Brian Hoyer?
Did Jake Delhomme start most of the 2011 season? Is that what happened?
I don't remember that. Did he?
It says that on the roster was Jake Delhomme, Jeff Garcia, and T.J. Yates.
Wow. Wow, they've had just some trash.
They just have not had good quarterbacks, and they've won four division titles.
I mean, this is it's insane.
He played one game that year, so no.
I think that was mostly T.J. Yates.
I guess it was T.J. Yates. Man.
Wow.
I thought he came in late and won a playoff game.
That's the great T.J. Yates for you.
He did win a
playoff game against the Bengals.
My bad.
On the road, right?
On the road.
You don't go in.
Went into Cincinnati.
Don't you ever say a bad word about T.J. Yates.
Oh,
I will
man.
Fight you at the local Wings franchise.
We keep threatening the fight. I keep waiting for it to happen.
By the way,
I just challenged
your
12-year-old cousin. I still can't get
speaking
a fight.
Of fights, a part of my take, guys, are co-hosting – or they're fill-in hosting Kentucky Sports Radio today for Matt Jones.
Oh, no.
And they just put Coach Cal in the hot seat, and people are losing their collective mind.
Matt Jones like went to Europe for like 5 weeks.
He's
on
Europe for like 2 months. And he let the PMT guys co-host the second day he's out.
Wow.
And people in Kentucky are
the
losing
who guys?
Their minds.
Pardon my tech guys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
That's from the Barstool Sports guys?
Yeah.
So 3D.
You know who they are.
Coach Cal is on the hot seat.
3D
let's do it,
coming
let's
up
do it
next.
Tomorrow for 4 hours.
I don't know what 3D's doing. It'll be better than what we just did. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. Bearded intern back there rocking it out. Thanks for hanging out with us today, guys. Do it again tomorrow. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.